We who, by the grace of Srila Prabhupada, are engaged in activities of Krishna consciousness certainly lead very interesting and fulfilled lives, even compared to most materialistic people, and even some materialistic people try to get an interesting life by doing things like mountain climbing and intense sports. They're trying to make their lives interesting. But automatically, Krishna is interesting. And if we take interest in Krishna, Krishna reciprocates in such a way that we meet all kinds of interesting people. Or maybe they're not normally interesting, but somehow or other by the touch of Krishna, when they see Krishna's devotees, it brings out the best in them, or maybe the worst in them. And we get into all kinds of situations where, due to hearing this knowledge of Krishna consciousness from Srila Prabhupada, then we can see the hand of Krishna acting. A couple of days ago, a godbrother of mine, Patita Pavana Prabhu, sent me by email a description of an anecdote from the late 1960s when I was still a young teenager in school. Young teenager means lower teen years. And at that time, Back to Godhead magazine mimeographed. You may not even know what that word means, because mimeographs are way, way out of date technology. produced in small quantities, about 500 copies. And the devotees used to take them for selling. Mostly they took them to shops which catered to hippies. I don't know exactly what kind of things they'd sell. Maybe bells, or maybe chillums, or whatever. Because the hippies were the people who took interest in Krishna consciousness at that time overwhelmingly more than others, and who were actually interested to hear what the devotees had to say. So Patita Pavan Prabhu had a regular service of every month bringing the newly printed, mimeographed Back to Godhead magazine to a hippie shop. I think they called them head shops. And they'd give them on consignment. So he was delivering one time, and someone else had come, another wholesaler had come to deliver whatever his goods were. And this other delivery boy or whatever made some sarcastic comment that, "You Krishna people, all you talk about is Krishna. Would that it were true up to the present day." But he said, "All you think about is Krishna." And before Patita Pavan Prabhu could respond, the guy in the shop responded by saying, "You know, it's natural. If you love someone, you talk about them all the time. How do you get that? That's Krishna within his heart speaking." Exactly. Perfect understanding of Krishna consciousness. And if it had come from Patita Pavana Prabhu, that the person who had made that sarcastic comment might have thought, "Well, that's just his fanaticism." But when it came from a neutral party, what could he say? Krishna's inspiring within the heart had him say that. Now, another little anecdote. This is from here, ISKCON Salem, South India. Gokul Chandra Prabhu, the temple president, told me just yesterday or the day before something that happened. We're discussing why am I lying on a bed when usually we lie on the floor, and due to my present condition, I'm lying on a bed because to get down and up from the floor is more painful than onto and off a bed. So, in this regard, he told me a little anecdote that had happened some time ago, that one couple, young couple, and at least here in India, still when you say young couple, it still means, usually means a man and his wife, and the wife is, the man is a male and the female, the wife is a female. So they had, they were taking interest in Krishna consciousness in Bangalore, and they'd seen the video of devotees at ISKCON Salem using the firewood stove as a kitchen, and somehow that's created a lot of interest. That video, I'm surprised at that, because when I was traveling in Bengal in the 1980s, we were going on in the villages, mostly I was in Bangladesh, and that was it for cooking. Cooking means you cook on firewood or cow dung patties. There's nothing else to, no one had ever dreamed of or imagined that you could cook using any other materials. So it's a very common thing. And still in India, up to the present day, there's still, unknown to the city slickers, the urbanites, there's still lakhs and lakhs, must be crores of people who take meals that are cooked by their wife on firewood stove, which firewood or cow dung, dried cow dung patty. So it's surprising to me that modern Indians don't even know this. They're so used to in the cities, you used to get coal stoves also, but nowadays it's mostly gas. And they have no idea of firewood or that you can go in the forest and bring some firewood. Here we don't, we buy the firewood. Someone else goes in the forest and collects it. So anyway, he and his wife were interested to see the firewood stove. And naturally, they also saw the major temple coming up. So they're impressed by that, and they're impressed by the firewood stove, and they wanted to have a look around and see everything. So Gokul Chandra took them to the little hut, which he lives in. It's about 10 foot by 10 foot. That's his facility that he lives in. And they asked, where's the furniture? He said, oh, we don't use furniture. You don't sleep on the bed? No, we sleep on the floor, Gokul Chandra said. He said, well, isn't it uncomfortable? It must be quite hard. And then Gokul joked with them, because he's got a little flab. He's a little fatty, not very fatty. And so he grabbed a little of the flabby hip and said, you see, I've got built-in insulation. And he laughed. And then, so after some time, this young man and his wife came again from Bangalore, this time with a whole group of other young IT professionals, they were IT, information technology professionals. And the thing which impressed him most, no longer the firewood cooking, no longer the big temple, but he said, you see, these people have no ego. He said, he can joke about him being fat. We wouldn't do that. And previously in India, at least in my experience, beginning from the 1970s, people are not very much bodily conscious, whether you're tall or short or thin or fat or even very beautiful or not very beautiful. Black skin and lighter skin, that's noticed. But otherwise, all this tall, short, fat, thin, people don't notice much, which I noticed that they didn't notice, because in the West, having a thin body like this for a young man is considered something. What do you call a skinny weed? But in Bengal, especially at that time, in Bangladesh, so many people were skinny and thin. I I might have appeared quite normal to them, if not a little taller. Anyway, the point I'm making is not so much in the bodily concept of life, but now it's very much there in the Indian cities where you have to go to the gym and work off your fat and get a strong body and you have to be beautiful and for the girls. So he was impressed. No egoism. That's an interesting point, though, that we're building on Srila Prabhupada's order, on his desire, big buildings, big opulent temples were constructed for ISKCON in India. Srila Prabhupada had constructed in Vrindavan, Bombay, and Mayapur major temples. And even at that time in Mayapur, the temporary temple, the main huge temple still hasn't come, but still whatever's there is already a major tourist attraction in West Bengal. So Srila Prabhupada wanted these temples, and Hyderabad also. Hyderabad, ISKCON Hyderabad was also constructed during Srila Prabhupada's manifest presence. So Srila Prabhupada wanted these temples. He said that opulent deity worship is the best way to attract the Indian public. And for this reason, he wanted very striking temples. And since that time, so many beautiful temples have been constructed by ISKCON in India that it's hard to impress a devotee anymore, because if you go to a new temple opening and you see there's so many. Chennai temple, gorgeous, and then Siliguri, Kanpur, and then there's modernistic styles in Bangalore, the Ritvik Center, and Delhi, and this and that. But they're impressive. People are impressed by that opulence. So opulence can be attractive, but so can renunciation and simplicity, as we can see from this anecdote that I just related, that even more than the big temple that's coming up, and it is impressive, is the simplicity of lifestyle of the devotees living here. And in the case of Gokulchandra, he just wasn't bothered about. He didn't try to hide his fatness. He's not very fat, but just he made a little joke out of it. So maybe different people are attracted by opulence, some people are more attracted by simplicity. Definitely having opulent temples has put our movement on the map, so to speak, here in India for many years now, and even in Australia when they got that beautiful building in Melbourne that made a lot of difference, and Bhaktivedanta Manor in London, and these temples, they add respectability and prestige to our movement. But living simply, that also has its attraction to some people. And in some ways, it's easier for us to do, because it's easy to live simply. It's not so easy to live opulently, because you have to make all kinds of arrangements, which means you have to bring lots of money. And it's hard to outdo the materialists in opulence. We have many beautiful temples, but frankly speaking, there are so many temples, even new temples, what to speak of old temples, Jain temples. They're really fabulously spectacular. It's hard to outdo them. So many Swami Narayan temples are coming up in Gujarat, and already came up, and they're very attractive to see. Of course, hardly anyone ever visits them, because there's no real spiritual. There's no, the real opulence is the devotees, the kirtan, the life of the temple. But as an initial attraction, or you could say as an architectural achievement. There are so many amazing temples in India, and there are so many rich people, despite the propaganda that India is a poor country. That propaganda has died down somewhat, and still there are so many poor people in India, no doubt. But there are poor people all over the world, even in America, which everyone thinks is most opulent. Anyway, it's easier if we're actually transcendentalists. It's easier to live simply because what do you do? You just need a mat on the floor, a little prasadam, little cloth. We don't need all kinds of facilities, so it's easy, and we don't have to make lots of arrangements, so we don't have to look after so many things. And I'm saying this as usually electrical equipment for technological equipment for speaking this talk and having it broadcast here and there. So yeah, we're not fanatics about being simple. We can use things in Krishna's service, but we're not supposed to be attached to those things. Anasaktasya vishayan yataham upayanjataha nirbandha Krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagya mucchate. Srila Rupa Goswami instructs that yukta vairagya, or vairagya, meaningful renunciation, is that in which someone is not attached to anything of this world for his own personal sense enjoyment, but can utilize everything with a spirit of detachment in the service of Krishna. And naturally, a devotee doesn't want to accumulate all kinds of things for sense gratification. That's the business of the materialistic people. Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam. They're attached, very attached, to material opulence and sense enjoyment, but the result is taya parita chetasam, and then their consciousness becomes covered by illusion. So definitely transcendentalists, they're neither attached to wealth nor to poverty, but their natural tendency is to not clutter their lives up with things extraneous to their service for Krishna. Here at ISKCON Salem, there's a policy that in the ashram, there's no electricity, and the brahmacharis, if they really need it for their service, they can have a phone, but only very simple phone, no flashy phone like this. Keep things very simple. No current, electric current means there are no fans. The policy has the effect that people who are coming for material opulence won't come. People who want to live comfortably in the name of spiritual life, they won't come. Now, obviously, opulence has an important place in Srila Prabhupada's mission, as I just gave a little outline of. Not denigrating those who live in opulence for the sake of preaching. Srila Prabhupada himself did that. But I'm just saying that simplicity can also be one. Deliberately living very simply certainly has its place in Krishna consciousness. After all, simple living and high thinking is especially the motto of our farm communities. About being detached, there can be hundreds and thousands of anecdotes and of different devotees around the world, because devotional service naturally brings detachment. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janyatyashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayada Haitukam. One who takes to the service of Krishna, the Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then automatically, in their heart, detachment from everything of this world and knowledge arises by performing devotional service to Krishna. Anyway, here's one anecdote that Jnanananda Goswami told me. He just mentioned it in passing once. Before he took sannyas, once he was in Navadvip town, he was going there for some purpose or other, and he had some, his saffron cloth happened to be torn, which is not the kind of thing that would bother him very much because he's a very detached devotee. And he was wearing the kind of chapal or slippers, footwear, very cheap. The flip-flops, I think they're called in English, just some rubber things. Hawaii chapels, they're called in Bengal. So he's not looking very wealthy. And he just mentioned that he was going like that, and someone called out appreciatively, "Sadhu, sadhu, this is a real holy person." So in Navadvip, in Navadvip town, it's among the people in general, they think, oh, ISKCON's very opulent and they live a very luxurious life. So these Western devotees, they have so much money, which is actually true compared to almost everyone in Navadvip. So this one person appreciated how he called out loudly to bring it to the attention of others, referring to Jnanananda Prabhu. Well, that's Jnanananda. He's throughout his life, he's had the detachment and simplicity in the sense that he loves kirtan, he loves book distribution. He's just naturally a devotee. He's very friendly to others, tries to help others in Krishna consciousness. His adherence to Srila Prabhupada without being fanatical about it. So that's the real best opulence, is to be a devotee of Krishna. And there may be so many, there must be so many devotees. Definitely there are so many devotees throughout the world who are just naturally happy in Krishna consciousness, not pretending to be something that they're not. They're in Krishna consciousness, and they're just happy like that. Mahavishnu Maharaj, he's maligned for his unusual hat and his dressing style, but he does Harinam. He loves it. He does it all over the world. That's his life. Great. He's a devotee. Down every atom in his body. He's got chanting Hare Krishna. Chant Hare Krishna, be happy. That's what he does. It appeals to many. Some people don't. Like I say, he should be more staid. Well, maybe as a sannyasi he should be, but as a devotee, he's completely devotee. So there are so many devotees all over the world who have been touched by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu descending through disciplic succession, who they're just taking pleasure in being devotees, being happy, and they're getting Krishna's mercy. And that mercy is radiating to others. Just one little more anecdote, then I'll finish this talk. It was told to me by Gokul Chandra Prabhu, who is the temple president here at ISKCON Salem, kindly accommodating me as I'm doing literally nothing all day, just lying down. I give a little talk now and then. So he related this anecdote to me this morning, that in 1993, he told me, in Rijeka, which is the city in Croatia where he's from, we first visited the temple for Sunday feast, for the Sunday feast there. And he was interested in the philosophy, so he started coming every morning for the talks, for the Bhagavatam class. And then after a week before the next Sunday feast, he had a dream in his sleep of seeing some big temple, something he'd never, in this lifetime, he'd never seen anything like that. But he understood it was a temple, and he saw there's certain features of it, some details he saw also. So the next morning when he went to the temple, the ISKCON temple there in Rijeka, he told this to Sri Hari Prabhu, who was a devotee there, and he asked, well, what was that? And Sri Hari said, well, maybe you saw in your dream Vrindavan temple, ISKCON Vrindavan temple. And at that time, Gokulacharya was completely new. He'd never seen a photo. He didn't even know of ISKCON Vrindavan temple. So Sri Hari Prabhu showed him a photo and of ISKCON Vrindavan. He said, no, it's not that. It's not white like that. It's some grey stone like this. And now he just realized, what is that temple? It's the temple he's building here in ISKCON Salem. So that's... Krishna is the controller of time, and that desire of Krishna for this temple to be built was already there, and he already knew that this Bhakta, whatever his name was, I can't remember, was going to come to a place that he'd never heard of at the time, long, far away, and build a temple, which is going on now. So Krishna is acting in our lives. Hare Krishna, all glories to His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, who introduced us to all this nectar. Dante nidhaya chunakam padayo nipatya kritva chakaku shatameta daham bravimi hai sadhava sakala eva vihaya durat chaitanya chandra charne kurutanu ragaha Vancha kalpa taru bhyascha kripa sindhu bhi eva cha patita nam pavanebhyam. Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.